Accession number 29065, Mr. Michael White, Reel 16. Now, what were you actually doing at these drill nights or when you went to Northampton Drill Hall? I mean, what sort of training would you be doing?
Well, the actual training would be kind of like for those signallers, they would be kind of doing signals, and then those with the gunners, they would be actually on the Bofors as such. There was no kind of drill marching up and down as such, because most of the national servicemen were a bit reluctant to be in the TA anyway. But when it actually came to... I think we had to do so many evenings and I think two weekends at Northampton Drill Hall, and then every year around about the July period we had to do an annual camp for 2 weeks.
Now what was that like?
Now I did two annual camps, and the first one was at a place called Stiffkey near Wells in Norfolk. This was with the Bofors as such, and this was under campus with tents and things like that. It was no hardship for anyone who'd actually been to the Korean War to be in a tent. It would be a luxury, really. But then I do remember kind of with the Bofors, because we was facing out to sea over the marshes over kind of near Wells, and they used to have these planes bring these sleeves, seem to say like they did in Hong Kong. They used to tow these sleeves, and the old Bofors used to kind of fire at them and things like that, and if they were lucky they hit one, or if not. And then we did have certain kind of they took us out in the trucks to places like Norwich and things like that for that, and it wasn't bad. We actually went there by three tonners all the way from Kettering to Norfolk. And the second one was the following year. It was to Bude in Cornwall. We went right down to Bude. I can't remember how we got down there, but this was practically right on the more or less like the cliffs. But sadly, on that fortnight, they had this kind of sea mist about and things like that. And the similar happenings there. We was kind of like training. There was a lot of the TA National Service, and they were not very cooperative, you know, a bit reluctant and things like that. And for many of us, we actually thought at that time that the territorial thing was a waste of time. But for me, it was a bonus, really, because I was still an apprentice at that time, and of course I could have my 2 weeks summer holiday any time. But some of the actual the gunners in the TA sort of thing, they were on this fixed holidays for the Kettering holiday week, and it usually clashed with them. So theoretically, I had two holidays every year, and twice I was actually paid as an apprentice for not being there, and I was actually paid by the so-called army, the TA. So I did quite well out of it, really.
Now, you decided to leave, from the sound of it, as soon as you could, though. Well, that would be what, 1954.
No, the actual period, I mean, you didn't really know when it was actually coming to an end. This order would come through that kind of you'd be finished on such and such. So we then had to report down to the drill hall. You took all your stuff with you, sort of thing, a kit bag full of...
Did you ever think of staying with them?
No, because we'd actually... There was myself and a fellow from a place from Corby, sort of thing. He was in the 20th Field Regiment. We were there, which was after I went to Korea. It was on the 25-pounders. And because we'd been to Korea, they offered us... If we actually sign on in the Territorial Army, they'll give us a couple of stripes and blah, blah, blah. And, of course, I'd actually been in the cadet sort of thing, but I enjoyed the cadets and I reasonably enjoyed being in the army sort of thing, but I was a bit reluctant to be in the Territorial Army because I felt a bit bitter going in after coming back from Korea, and all my workmates sort of thing, they just went on some form of reserve.
So you left it as soon as you could, as soon as you knew.
Yeah, so we just took the kit bag down and we just handed the things over, and that was it. And it was just end of story. There was no kind of coming to an end. There was no, when we came back from Korea to anything, there was no flag wavings, no nothing. In fact, it was an anti-climax for most Korean veterans who actually came back.
Now tell me about your membership of the Korean Veterans Association, because you were quite prominent in the Hertfordshire one. Tell us about it.
I worked for the Watford Observers, for 27 years sort of thing, and of course I think we'd actually turned over to computers by then, and of course all this information used to come in from different people who had been doing different functions and things like that. So these tidbits of information used to come from the journalists into our department, and we used to tap it in on these computers. And one day there was a little tiny piece came in from the Korea veterans who were just been formed in Watford. Apparently they'd only three, and there was only about five lines. And I actually tapped this in. It was perhaps by fate, really, it came to me. And I tapped these about five lines in. They were seeking veterans of the Korean War. They were thinking of forming a new branch in Watford. So I looked at it two or three times, I think, and because this dress of the newfound secretary, he was just up the road from where the Watford Observer was. So one lunchtime, so I just popped in to see him and things like that. And he was saying there was going to be a meeting at the local Royal British Legion at Croxley Green. And so I went up there on that day. I got, because I'd been never been a member of any service like ex-service thing or British Legion and things like that. So I went up there completely cold, and there was these fellas there, and I always remember I met a friend who I didn't know him. He'd been in the Royal Signals, and he went to on the same boat from Hong Kong to Korea as me, and he was the same age as me, a national serviceman, and he'd actually come up from Neasden in London. And I always remember we started talking together, and you kind of these fellas there, there was only just a few at that time. We thought, oh, they're all old boys sort of thing. And we thought kind of, our memories really went back. They're all young lads, something like that. So anyway, we went into the bar of this British Legion and, you know, kind of more or less introduced to these different people there. And they're all much older than myself. A lot of them, these were the old soldiers of World War II and that. We sat round this round table, and because it was the branch was beginning to form. And so this person who was kind of like the leading figure sort of thing, he said, you know, kind of there was one fella, he'd been in the army for about 34 years and things like that. So he actually became the president. Another fellow, Connie, was in the British Legion. He became the secretary. Someone else became the treasurer and things like that. And I always remember he said to me, he said, well, what do you do? And things like that. And I work at the local newspaper and things like that. Oh, he says, good. He says, you can be the PRO sort of thing. He said, what we want you for is to get this information in the papers and things like that, you know, so we can kind of find these long-lost career veterans. And so from then onwards, because I'd never really had a great deal of experience at that time, and so then it was just a matter of knocking these things out. And of course, I had access to the papers, and my local paper, they had papers in St Albans, in Boreham Wood, in Hendon and Finchley's and places like that. And also we had the sister newspapers in High Wycombe's, and then there was another one in Greenwich and places like that. So I was able to get these, and of course I had easy access into the paper through the editors and things like that, and I was able to acquire all the photographs and that. And so I became the PRO. And so what happened then, we had a lot of these people who'd actually been involved in things like, there was one fellow, for example, who'd been in the Argyles, and he was in the thing when they got napalm, when the Americans dropped napalm on, and he lived in Slough in Buckinghamshire, it's Berkshire, I think it is now. So I used to kind of, I got a photograph of him. I used to write to the Windsor and Slough Express, and I'd write this thing, a little piece about him and things like that, and then I'd give him his name and address and blah blah blah, and then at the bottom I'd put the branch meets on every third Sunday and things like that. And so systematically I went through all these people who got a story. So we went into St Albans, of course. We had one fellow who'd been one of the 40 odd of the Gloucesters who escaped, and he had got a good story behind it. So the newspapers then used to kind of phone him up, or phone these people up, and visit them and to get their story. Then they'd get their picture in the paper. And so little by little, these other people used to see these bits, and so gradually they used to come to the thing there. And then as it expanded, we used to kind of get what they call, each branch used to kind of buy a standard, you know, it used to cost about £400 and things like that. And then, so they used to go to the different kind of areas, like I remember going to like places like Dover Castle and down into Chelsea Hospital, St Albans Cathedral, Durham Cathedral and things like that. They used to have these big gatherings of the career veterans, and there used to be the big buffets afterwards and the bands and all things, pageantry and things like that. And then when it came to, they used to have these trips, they started these trips, sponsored trips to Korea sort of thing. These were sponsored by the Korean government.
Now, you went twice. Tell me about those
and
trips.
So
that was fantastic.
In 1983, there was 13 of us went from the so-called Watford branch. It was called Watford District in those early days before it enlarged and went to Hertfordshire. There were 13 of us. And so I got the photographer down to take a picture sort of thing. Of course, it went into the paper. And we went to... I can't remember how much it was now, but we had to go down to Gatwick because at that time the Korean Airlines, they were not allowed to come into Britain because of this vast, I think, so many £1,000 landing fees. They come in now, but so we had to, so they paid, I think it was about £4,000 if I remember rightly, to come into Gatwick. So we all went down there, and all from areas from, you know, from Manchester, from Liverpool, from Scotland, from Wales, and everywhere. I think there was 180 82 of us, or 180 something, and we had this DC-10 all to ourselves we did, and all the staff on the actual, the plane itself, they all wore the national costumes, and the Piper was on board, and I remember the it was someone's birthday, and they produced this birthday cake. These are the Koreans. Of course, all the booze on the plane itself was all complimentary, and you could sit anywhere where you like. And of course, this was quite an adventure to me, sort of thing. So in those days, it was just before or just after when the Russians shot down one of the Korean airliners, you know, where it was hovering over the southern parts of Russia and things like that. So we actually went the same route as that. So we went from Gatwick, we went up to Iceland, and once we got to Iceland, I think we came into this kind of the so-called land of the morning sun, or whatever it's called, where it's permanently daylight. And so then we turned over and we went to Greenland, and I was a little bit disappointed about Greenland because I expected to be all kind of covered in white and snow and things like that. There was quite a bit of greenery there, but the captain of the plane, he called on, you know, on the tannoy when anything was interest there, and about all these icebergs. I'd never seen an iceberg before, and there's all these icebergs all floating out in the sea. Then we then moved into the northern part of Canada. I expect we was going over, perhaps over kind of Quebec and Montreal, that part, but we were way up the top there. We were right over above the tree line, because it was all daylight the whole way, and there was no trees, and it was like this tundra. There was all these kind of little lakes and things like that, because this was when all the ice had melted. So we flew right over kind of the northern Canada, and we came up to this big Mackenzie River, and I suppose the top part of the Rocky Mountains. And then we then turned into Alaska, and then we came down into Anchorage. But I was disappointed about, this was about 3 o'clock in the morning, it was still semi-daylight, and I was a bit disappointed there, where I expect to see all snow and ice and that, but it was quite green, Alaska. We came down there, and this is where the plane, it refueled, and the crew changed and things like that, so we had a while to stop there. You can see all the, I always remember in the actual Anchorage airport terminal sort of thing, there was
not,
this.
Not too much about Canada, get to Korea, sorry.
Anyway, there was these big grizzly bears and polar bears. Anyways, so we set off there, and we went a similar route to, say, where the Russians had shot down this Korean jumbo, but we kept a little bit lower down, and then we kind of followed along, and then we went between the, I suppose, the, because Japan is made up of certain islands, we went between the islands of Japan. Then we came down in I suppose it would be Kimpo Airport in Seoul, and we came down there, and it was about 7 o'clock in the evening, and it was just getting dark, and it had been 26 hours, I think, what I remember of it, kind of, for that travel. But you see, nowadays they go straight over Russia, because we're not allowed to fly over Russia or China, because, I mean, these are the countries we were involved in the Korean War. So anyway, we was at when we landed at Seoul, we was met by all these television cameras and all these dignitaries and things like that. We went into, they had about five of these coaches there, and on the side of the actual coaches, they had these big kind of cloth streamers, you know, welcome to the Korean veterans or what have you, and there used to be a sign in the front, I remember, and it had welcome English Korea veterans, because jokingly it upset those from Scotland and from Wales. I mean, it was only jokingly and things like that, but all they treated us as royal, and they took us to this big Sheraton Walker Hotel. It was about a five-star one and things like that, and it had a big theatres and that. And after that, they just took us by coach here, there, and everywhere, to the front line, to the Gloucester memorials,
and was like it that. As you remembered it, the front line area,
the actual part, the part really. We went to the Gloucesters, but you see, when I was in the front line, we was well past that. We was much further north than the Gloucester area and things like that. But you see, all the area where kind of like finished, it all finished up in this so-called demarcation zone. And so these hills, like the 355s and the, I suppose, the 166s and the 187s, are all in, I suppose, demarcation and things like that. So we had these different.
So you couldn't visit them?
No, couldn't. The actual first trip, it was only for so many days, and of course it was sponsored by the Korea veterans, by the government of Korea and things like that. I mean, they wined and dined us, and luxury hotels and things like that. It was marvellous, really.
What about your second trip?
But on the return journey, there'd been another problem with this bomb going off or something in I think it's in Burma, I think that. So they lost another plane or something like that. So instead of coming back over what we call the northern route over kind of from Alaska and what have you, we had to come back the southern route, which was via, this was on a jumbo. We came down, we were not allowed to go over China, so we came back Bangkok's and over those places, and we finished up back in Italy, and then they gave us another plane to bring us back to Gatwick, and it was it was an experience.
And what about your second trip? What year was that?
Now the second year was 2 years later. This was 1985, but this trip was much better really, because it was sponsored by the Lionesses of Satibul. Now I'd never heard of these. This is the female version of the Lions Club, you know, the charity things in England, and they sponsored to the second week to the tune of about £50,000. They got their sponsorship money from Korean television, Hyundai and Samsung televisions and Pohang shipyards and things like that, and other things. And so after the first week, which was very similar to the first one, we went up to the demarcation zones and kind of like the Gloucesters and the Capyongs and all those different monuments and things like that. So then they then took us down by coaches. Once again, there was about 180 odd people and things like that. But amazingly, there were about four. For the first time ever, they were the next of kin, you know, the wives of kind of those who'd been killed. They brought four of them with them. And so we went down, we saw lots of these different monuments we'd never seen before. We visited the Samsung, where you see all these videos going around on these things. And then we went to the Pohang shipyards, where you saw this iron works and things like that. And then eventually we stayed in some beautiful hotels halfway down where all these Korean mounds were, the ancient civilizations. And then we went down into Busan. Now, this is the first time we've been back to Busan. And, of course, now it was an old ramshackle shanty town when we were in the 1950s. Now it was all this mud with these beautiful beaches and that. Anyway, we stayed in these hotels inland, but then we was then able to go on. They took us to these Korean meals where you're having all this Korean. And of course, the standing joke was, "Is it dogs?" You know, because Koreans have dogs, but it was only a joke. They took us to all different places, and of course, we went to the United Nations cemetery, and of course, where we had these big. Of course, it was a lovely day at that time, and. We had they presented everyone with flowers, and you know, because we had all taken these little poppy crosses, you know, for our local, you know, killed and things like that, and then there was a kind of parade and. But one thing I do remember, which brought a bit of a lump to my throat, really, that these four ladies who were kind of, and also there was a son as well, that they were kind of like the war widows, and when they came to the graves, because it was a lovely day, the sun was shining, as I remember, and they gave them these flowers to put on the grave and that, and I remember these ladies, they were sitting on these humps a lot, the bit of the grave sort of thing, and they were actually stroking the actual the grass on the grave and things like that. And they got this beautiful plaque and the little things around it. And there was one of the lads. He was like the son, and his father was in the Northumberland Fusiliers, and he was called back for kind of like a reservist. And of course, he was actually born just after his father had gone to Korea sort of thing, so he never actually met his father. And at that time, I always remember, he was 37 years of age sort of thing and things like that, so it's a big thing really. He'd finally, you know, his father, who he never knew and things like that. But there was one little lady, she came from Scotland, and I think she'd been sponsored by the British Legion up in Scotland to about a couple of £100 or whatever it was. And she was only a tiny lady, and her husband he was killed actually in his name was Corporal Heron, and he was actually killed with the Norfolks, and because the British what do they call them, the Atagi, British attaches and things like that, they made a little bit of fuss of and things like that, and they took her away, and she stayed with them during that period and things like that, but it was it was very good. It was, and they gave us lots and lots of gifts and all things like that. And I've still got a box of Korean booze and things like that left over, even now.
And yet, you haven't been back since.
No, I've been twice, and I always said, if I want to go again, because a lot of these things will be repetition, you know, with all the big, because they present you with the peace medal, as they call it. It's, and, you know, you can always tell the person who's been back, of course, they've got this peace medal. And I always said, if I wanted to go back again, I'd want to go back to North Korea, where the prison camps were, up the top by the Yalu River and things like that. But you see, this in 2006, there's no chance of that ever happening and things like that, because I'm supposed to be classed as a war criminal.
Now, what about what impact? What do you want to say something about overall about the impact of your national service career time? Not career, it's the wrong word. Had on you. I mean, you know, as a national service, what did it, was it good or bad for you? Was it how do you react to your time as a national serviceman now?
Well, as everyone had to do national service and you had to get on with it, I was fortunate, really. I'd actually been in the cadets, and so I'd never had any really great problems in the early stages of training and things like that. But, like I say, that originally, when we actually, because at first we did not know we was going to Korea, we were purely going to Hong Kong, which was kind of a would class as one of the better you know, stations and things like that. And then, of course, originally was thinking about volunteering for Korea. Then we changed our mind when the problem with the Gloucesters. And, of course, then we went there. And, of course, it was, you had no choice sort of thing, and you just made the best of it. But it didn't particularly worry me. But you see, it was, there's a lot of national service. I mean, you know, they hadn't been anywhere. It was an adventure as such, especially if you had no hang-ups, no problems, you were not wounded. I mean, a lot of national servicemen were wounded, and some were killed and prisoner of war and things like that, but I never had any hang-ups and that. And so with all the I went on two aircraft, I went on three big ships and two on the German X-liners, and I went to all these exotic locations, the other side of the world sort of thing, which in 2006 had more likely cost a fortune, really, to go on a month's cruise or 6 weeks cruise and that.
Any physical or mental effects after your time in the army, do you think? From what you said earlier,
I've always had problem with my right foot. I think it was perhaps maybe a touch of maybe the cold, the frost, or things like that. And I've always perhaps jokingly said, you know, a touch of frostbite and things like that. But I've had nothing really, no great problem. I did have problems under my arms, I remember, with all these bits on the, on what he called the pubic hair sort of thing, you know, things like that. And I did shave them off and things like that, but after a while, you know, when they've been washed a few times and things like that, it had no problems.
And any effect on your hearing?
Well, as most gunners, you know, with the guns going off and things like that, I mean, lots and lots of gunners did have lots of problems with the hearing, especially now as they got older. I've got a little bit of problem with one of my ears, and I don't think my hearing is as good as it perhaps should be, but then this is part of ageing and things like that.
You haven't made a claim?
Oh, no, not at all. No, in some ways, national service, it was marvellous for people like me, because, I mean, the opportunity to go abroad and things like that. And also, one thing it did, it gave me the confidence to leave Kettering to go to Watford, which I think if I'd never, ever been in national service, I'd never had the confidence to actually leave my town and things like that. Because my father was quite upset when I said I was going to Watford and things like that. What do you want to go there for?
Thank you very much.